91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Butterflies might be pretty, but they, along with bees and other insects, are all part of a healthy ecosystem. The Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden will present its Sustainable Urban Landscape Symposium March 22nd. This year, it's going to be all about how to attract these pollinating insects. Joining me to talk about it on the telephone with us, Pollinator Program Co-Director with the Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation, Mace Vaughn. Hi, Mace.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. And Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist Scott Berline, who was also chair of the Taking Root campaign. Thank you both for being here today. You can join the conversation calling us at 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. So I'd like to start out with, if we can, Scott, what is a pollinator? Can you define what that is for people that may not be aware?
Mostly it's insects, but it's also a few birds and bats. But in our region, it's entirely insects that can range from anything from a beetle to a fly to a wasp or bee, and then also the butterflies and moths.
Wasps too.
Wasps, but there's good ones. There's
good
lots of
wasps,
good ones.
Huh?
Oh yeah.
Wasps scare me. My husband is raising bees, so I can deal with those. But wasps, a whole nother story.
They always remind me of police cars in my rear view mirror. You know,
keep an eye out.
Right.
Mace, anything you want to add to that?
You know, I would say just to give wasps a little bit, you know, give them a little bit of a pass. But at the flower, when you're in a garden and you see wasps visiting flowers, they are, in fact, pollinating, and when they're at the flower, they're just very gentle animals. So, you know, you do want to stay away from that hornet's nest or that yellow jacket's nest, but when you build a flower garden and you've got wasps and bees and other animals there, they're all very gentle when they're foraging for that pollen and nectar.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I have literally tried to provoke shrubs or flowers loaded with bees and wasps, rub my arms all through there. And when they're feeding,
you're brave man.
When they're feeding, they have no interest in stinging you at all. It's only when you get near their nests.
So all the more reason to get your landscape and your garden full of those plants that attract pollinators so they are busy feeding and not stinging.
Exactly. They're feeding, and they're also taking care of your pest insects because they prey on them or parasitize them also. So you lose you're controlling aphids, scale, lots of different caterpillars. So it's all a big ecosystem. It's all important to be in balance.
How does that work? How do they what do they do to make the aphids disappear?
Well, there's certain types will actually suck the juices out of the aphids.
Oh,
yeah, it's all nightmarish, psychodrama type stuff. The worst one is when a wasp will lay its egg inside a living caterpillar, and the egg hatches, eats out the caterpillar from the inside, and it hatches from its body.
Oh my gosh!
So, yeah, we're talking horror story stuff.
But Who knew?
It's all nature.
Well, there's something to be said there. Mace, talk a little bit about the whole idea of how you go about attracting these pollinators. What kind of things do you want to put in your landscape and in your garden?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting from my perspective is that when you fundamentally, at its heart, you're adding flowers. You want to add, now, not every flower is going to produce a lot of pollen and a lot of nectar, which is what these animals are coming to your garden to find. But when you choose those flowers in this conference, a lot of the talks that are going to be at this conference at the zoo are going to focus on, like, what are those best plants to choose? But when you choose those flowers, you can create a landscape that is both beautiful and humming with life, where you've got these insects flying from flower to flower, and it's not just pretty, but there's this added dimension of kind of wildlife in your garden. You also want to make sure that when you've created that food source, that you're being very careful and ideally not spraying any sort of insecticides or poisons on those plants that are going to be there to, you know, kind of harm those pollinators when they come. And this is where having that diversity, that variety of flowers, not only is attracting bees and butterflies that we think of as probably our most important pollinators, but those other insects too, like wasps, that if you do have some pests that build up, they're going to be there to feed on those pests and help keep those pest numbers low. So those are two really important things to think about. And if you want to take it to a whole another level, you can also, for different types of pollinators, add either nest sites And so a lot of people, for example, maybe you're keeping honeybees, and so that's one way to create a nest on your property. But if you want to focus on native pollinators, like let's say mason bees, for example, you can put out nest tubes, narrow tunnels into which those bees might nest, or you can plant plants that have hollow stems that when they grow and the stems die back, you might have insects, these different bees living in those hollow stems.
Well, wait. I have questions. Talk to me about these nests. You said you'd put out the pipe. Like, where do you just lay it on the ground? I mean, where do you put it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, usually these tunnels, these narrow tunnels, and they can be between an eighth of an inch and maybe 5/16 of an inch in diameter. They're usually going to be up above the ground, so 2 to 4 feet above the ground. You might get some old bamboo that you cut up into little bundles of straws, and you might put those together. You could tie them to a tree, 3 or 4 feet above the ground. You could put them in a shrub. You can stick them on the side of a fence, someplace that gets some sunlight, particularly in the early part of the day. And it's not unusual for all sorts of different bees to move into those tunnels, particularly in the springtime.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have questions about how to attract pollinators to your yard, you talked about hollow stems. Scott, maybe you can follow up on that. What are some plants that have these hollow stems?
Good question. Mace, help me out here.
No problem. If you could plant box elder or elderberry or a couple of natives. If you grow some really sort of tall wildflowers that have stiff stems, then a lot of our goldenrods and asters, even some sunflowers will do that. You've got a New England aster that grows up pretty tall. Instead of cutting it back to the ground in the fall when you're trying to clean up your garden, you might cut it back so it's 1.5 feet or 2 feet high, and that leaves for the next year a nice stiff stem that's hollow, into which you might have a small carpenter bee move the next year, that's a tiny little bee that moves into those sorts of hollow stems.
And you shouldn't worry about them coming to attack you. You just got to make sure they have enough to eat.
Totally. Well, and all of our... Yeah, I mean, our bees are really gentle creatures. Even, I'd stay away from a bumblebee nest, but most of our bees are solitary. So if we just focus on our bees, we have 3,600 native species, and all but about 50 or so are solitary species that even if you did have a nest, like a bunch of bundles of straw, they're very, very, very gentle animals. In fact, across the street from my house, I have a field in a school where my daughter used to go to elementary school that's full of tens of thousands of bees that nest, solitary bees that nest in the ground that those kids call the tickle bees. In fact, they came out yesterday, the first warm day of spring. They'll start coming out of the ground, and the kids already, even this weekend, were pretty excited. I heard a couple of shouts of, hey, the tickle bees are out.
Mm-hmm. Tickle bees.
So most of our bees are quite gentle.
Scott, talk a little bit about the whole program that you have. It's for sustainable landscape. So I'm assuming you're talking about perennials here. Is this, or can you plant annuals as well?
You can. The Sustainable Urban Landscape Symposium, this is our sixth or seventh year of it. And it's focused on different aspects of sustainability for all of those years. This year, we just decided to focus it on pollinators because it's really important, and it's an important topic that a lot of people have an interest in. So we went ahead and just focused entirely on that aspect of it this year. The second half of your question was?
Just the idea between perennials and annuals. Both work?
Well, the thing is, one thing that's very important for any pollinators is that you have a full season of bloom from as early as you can start, like now. When just the first flowers come out, all the way through the end of October into November, those early plants and flowers are very important for providing nectar when other plants don't. Now, it's very hard for a person in our area to put enough perennials in their garden to have something in bloom from now all the way through October. So annuals actually have a very important role because you can put those in Mother's Day and have blooms constantly through Halloween at least, and maybe halfway through November, providing pollen continuously. Plants like Lantana, Verbena, Bonariensis, and others. Some good old-fashioned zinnias a lot of times, very good at providing that long season.
When you talk about gardens, you've both talked a lot about flowers. Are there any vegetables that also you could plant that would be good for pollinators, or are they not interested in vegetables?
Oh, no, you could plant a lot of vegetables. I think what's interesting is just your own vegetable garden, you know, between, let's say you're growing blueberries or raspberries, there are fruits, or you're growing some apples or tree fruit, there you've got bloom in the early spring and into early summer. If you grow squash or melons or even tomatoes or peppers or eggplant, all those different garden plants all produce pollen and nectar. And if you're growing herbs, if you allow those herbs to go to bloom, whether it's basil or oregano or mint, again, the flowers, if you allow some of those plants to go to flower, produce tremendous resources for pollinators and can be part of your pollinator-friendly landscape.
Yeah, go ahead.
Not to mention plants like parsley, dill, fennel are favorites of butterflies for larval host plants. So you plant those, you will see the beautiful caterpillars that show up feeding on those plants. Now, they might not leave enough for you to have in your salad, but you get the butterflies, so it's awfully
cool.
And
you can put a lot of those herbs just in and around bushes and other plants, right? You don't have to have their own special garden.
Exactly. They look great in a garden. All they generally like is sun and not too much fancy stuff in the soil, just good old ordinary Cincinnati clay and a lot of sun, and you're in good shape.
Is there anything you can plant that will help mosquitoes go away? You know, you want to track those pollinators, but I think mosquitoes nobody's terribly fond of, except maybe the bats.
Mace?
That's a good question. You know, there isn't anything, I mean, really to may help the mosquitoes go away. The most important thing is eliminating any sort of permanent water sources, or making sure that you're changing water in your bird bath and there aren't any tires lying around, your gutters are clean. I mean, that's the way to keep mosquitoes at bay. It's really a matter of source, managing the source. And again, you know, we do have these fantastic predatory insects that in a healthy ecosystem and healthy garden will be out there patrolling a lot of your plants. And if you do have mosquitoes that are resting, there's a chance a bunch of them will get gobbled up. But really, you want to make sure you're keeping the water sources away.
Again, our number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, you can email talk@wvxu.org. What kinds of things will you be discussing as all of this goes? How long does this event go at the zoo?
This is next Thursday, a week from this Thursday, March 22nd, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
So it's all day.
All day. And we've got some great speakers. We've got Dr. Natalie Boyle. She's from Utah, coming in from the USDA. She's an expert on solitary bees. Dr. Janie from University of Kentucky is coming in, and he's talking about the adaptations of flowers to insects, the co-evolution between them. And that should not only be very interesting, but from what I understand, an absolutely beautiful presentation. Our good old local OSU Extension agent, Joe Boggs, one of the best entomologists I know, will be here talking about butterfly gardens attract more than just butterflies.
What else do they attract? We have to wait and find out.
Pests or bees, wasps, and the whole gamut, usually. And then we have Steve Foltz, my boss at the zoo. He'll talk about the best plants for pollinators, and I'll be giving a talk myself.
What are you going to talk about?
I'm kind of doing an overview of just the full, kind of opening it up with just a full overview of the full subject. And we'll see how it goes. Hopefully I don't overlap too much with the other speakers.
How much space do you really need to set up that whole pollinator situation? I mean, how much space do you need? A huge garden? Do you need, 5 foot by 20 feet or however? I mean, I don't know figures, but how big does it have to be?
Well, that's the cool thing about it is if more people garden, you don't have to do a very big garden at all. Now, I would tell everybody to do as big a garden as you can. That's about the best thing any homeowner can do for the environment. But just putting in some annuals, some good, some butterfly weed, different other host plants in your garden, and you've already made a pretty good start. Now, you add in your neighbor who doesn't have any room at all but puts in a few containers of Lantana or something like that, then you're starting to work it.
So container gardening's fine, too.
Absolutely.
Good. Mace, what other suggestions do you have?
I think letting yourself just be inspired to put a flower out there. I mean, I think that idea of anything from a container to converting your whole yard to a you know, a little patch of prairie. I mean, you could really do all of that and everything in between. And by taking at least, you know, by adding some flowers to that landscape or some host plants for butterflies to that landscape, everyone's making a difference. And that's what I think is pretty fun about it.
What about more than just flowers? Can you do the bushes and those sorts of things, sort of the bigger, you know, you think of flowers as being kind of delicate and small. Are there big plants you can put in?
Oh, absolutely. Trees and shrubs are incredibly important because think about how they're on the early end of blooming, most of them.
Azaleas, for example.
Yeah, they're there early in the year, so they're providing a lot. And you don't think of oaks as really a provider of bloom, but oak trees are a host plant for a wide range of different caterpillars.
Really?
Yeah, so they contribute quite a bit.
And they don't hurt the tree?
Not in balance. And of course, you know, what's funny is we're trying to encourage butterflies to the garden and encourage host plants to the garden, which brings caterpillars, but we're also encouraging wasps that feed on the caterpillars.
So, so that circle of life, right?
It's a circle of life right in your yard. I'll tell you this, you know, I come at this from the landscaping, from the garden side. I'm a plant geek, and I started as a collector and worked my way around to the point where now I think the insects in the garden are more interesting than the plants.
Well, there you go. Thank you both so much. And tell us again, when is this event at the zoo?
This is next a week from Thursday,
and
March 22nd.
Come, anybody can show up, or you have to sign up?
You have to buy a ticket.
Buy a ticket. You can get
come
that.
Come to the zoo's website.
All right. And I think we have a link on our website, too, at WVXU.org, so you can look out for it there. Thank you both for being here today.
You're welcome.
It was a real pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks, Mace. We've been talking about attracting pollinating insects. My guests have been pollinator program co-director with the Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation, Mace Vaughn, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist Scott Berline, who's also chair of the Taking Root campaign. Joining me in the studio now is the new interim host of Cincinnati Edition, Dan Hurley. Now, you may have seen Dan over the past couple of decades as the host of Newsmakers on Local 12. He's also the former director of the Cincinnati USA Regional Chambers Leadership Cincinnati program and is wrapping up his position as the interim president of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. We want to welcome Dan. And Dan, as some have said in Facebook posts recently, you seem to have failed at retirement.
I've failed several times at retirement. And, you know, a good friend of mine, Jessica Barron, she and I worked together at the chamber. She said, you never retire from, you retire to. And this has been this. These interim positions have been a surprise to me, but they're wonderful.
So let's talk a little bit. You're going to be hosting the program while we're searching for a full-time host. We are going to conduct a national search. Dan says he does not want to apply for the job on a permanent basis because retirement is coming eventually.
I am old, yes.
I don't know about that. But what kind of topics do you think you'd like to talk about in the few months that you'll be here?
Well, I think there are certain things that people watch me over the years on Newsmakers know that come up over and over again. I'm very interested in politics. So the Friday show is just perfect. I love it.
That's our news roundup.
The news roundup. And I really think it's important to focus on regionalism and a regional mentality rather than all of the fragmentation that we have. Education is very important, and the way that schools and education fit in, both at all levels, I think are very important. So all of those topics and a lot more. That's the wonderful thing. The topic that was just going on in the first part of this show, in dealing with implicit bias, unconscious bias, of course, I've been dealing with for the past year as the president of the Freedom Center, because that's one of our initiatives, one of our key initiatives going forward. And I think it's so important. So I thought that was, you know, these are great shows. They happen every day. So I think a great variety of shows. I don't know much about wasps and bees, but I learned something here in the last 20 minutes or so.
One of the things that we want to point out as well is that you will, as we said, be here for a couple of months. And you also have been a guest on the show. So you've had some experience with that as well, because you know more about history in Cincinnati than most people I know.
Well, I've been a guest many times on the show. And I like the dynamic, and I like the way that things go here. And the callers will be new for me. That's wonderful.
Dan, thanks so much for joining us. We look forward to your show starting tomorrow.
Starting tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Today's technical director was Josh Elstrow. We also had help from Jim Nolan. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.